Good afternoon, racing fans. This is Tom Amello from the backstretch at Saratoga Racecourse for another edition of our summer series of podcasts. We're having a conversation today with Tom Law, and Tom Law is a principal with the Clancy Brothers, not to be mistaken with the Songsters, but the Clancy Brothers of steeplechase fame and the Saratoga Special fame. And I'm going to give Tom an opportunity to talk with us about how he became Tom Law and his evolution with the Clancy Boys. I can tell you this, that I became familiar with Tom as an attendee at Saratoga Racecourse when you were a principal handicapper for the Pink Sheet. So here's what I'd like to ask you, Tom. So how did you get to be Pink Sheet Tom? What was the evolution there? And then we'll talk about your post-Pink Sheet days that brought you to the Clancy Boys.
Sure, happy to. So it's good to be here, by the way. Thanks for having me. But I grew up here in Saratoga, born and raised on the west side of town over by the high school. Went to Division Street School, Saratoga High, walked to school every day. And sort of got interested in racing, you know, as a kid, as a lot of kids do growing up here. You know, I liked the action of it. My family didn't really have much involvement or even any interest in it.
Let me interrupt here because, you know, I run a bed and breakfast, so we have people shipping in and out throughout the whole summer. And they're here because of the unique experience of Saratoga Racecourse. And one of the things that I kind of talk about, and I think you're bringing it in, is that this is one of the few places in the country where the track itself is part of the culture of the region. Mm-hmm. Not only just the city of Saratoga or Saratoga County, but let's say within a three-hour drive, a two-and-a-half-hour drive, it's part of the culture of the region. So it's the culture of the track in town that kind of seduced you to the game.
Absolutely. You know, it's great. You know, it was the circus came to town every year in August, you know, and It was interesting to me. You know, I tell people the most formative race for me was the 1982 Travers with Conquistador Cielo. It was supposed to be a world beater, and the Derby winner was in there, and the Preakness winner was in there, and the idea that one of those three horses wouldn't win the race, that a horse, an outsider, and runaway groom would win it, was fascinating to me, and I just was intrigued by it at that point. And I go back to that race all the time. Like, you know, I'm glad that race happened, and I'm glad that there are upsets in races, because that's what makes our sport interesting, you know. But back to your point, so I went to Cortland State and Saratoga High, Cortland State. First job out of college was at the Saratogian. Started as a sports writer.
So you were journalism through?
I studied communications, and got lucky getting a job. It was a part-time sports clerk job at the Saratogian. And the guy who had done some horse racing writing at one of the full-time writers, he had left, taken another job, and I think when the summer rolled around, I started in the fall, when the summer rolled around the following summer, they were like, they knew I had an interest in it and wanted to do it, and it's what I wanted to do. So they allowed me to do that, which was great.
From intern to paid employee, and
it was great. Like, I did that for, I guess, three summers and part of a fourth summer. It was awesome. I get to go, and it was basically full time. I was doing a lot of stuff. I was handicapping, like you said, for the Pink Sheet, writing stories, covering the stakes races, things like that. And, you know, I was in my early 20s, mid 20s. It was great. Like, being in the press box with a lot of guys that I really knew and respected. And, you know, it was a really lively place back then.
You said lively place. Absolutely. Some of the racetrack legends.
Yeah, sure.
Joe Hirsch was there.
He was. I got to meet him. Yeah.
Harvey Pack sitting in the back.
Sure. Right? Absolutely. It was it was like a dream come true, you know, and getting to interact with all the horsemen and stuff that I knew who they were and getting to know them, you know, like long story short, I used to have to go. It was great. I get to do that all summer long, and then when the fall would roll around, it'd be like I had to go back to doing high school stuff and college stuff, which was fine, but I was kind of like, ugh, you know, it was like having to go back to that was, it was tough, you know, after the summer, it was kind of fun.
Yeah, you're talking to Scotty Schulhofer and You know, Hall of Fame Bobby Frankel.
Sure.
So you need to go back and you got to talk to Coach Ray.
Yeah,
back
exactly.
At the high school.
Exactly. So, but I liked it. You know, I liked being a sports writer and stuff. And then I would go to different events on my own. You know, a lot of times on my own dime, I'd go down to the Belmont Stakes, or I went to the Breeders' Cup at Belmont in '95. Went to the Woodbine Breeders' Cup in '96. You know, and along the way, I met a lot of people. You know, as you know, you meet thousands of people. And I met guys from Thoroughbred Times magazine. I actually met them in Saratoga. They would come up for the summer around this time of year. They'd be here for the sales and the Jockey Club roundtable, all that kind of stuff. They would sit next to me in the press box. And I got to know them, kind of friendly. Fast forward to 1998, the Saratogian, which was, it wasn't thriving by any means at that time. It was doing pretty well. It was owned by Gannett at the time, so it was had good backing. They decided to send me to the Kentucky Derby in 98, like full paid trip. I was like, in heaven. I had been to Churchill Downs before when I was in college. I went to the Breeders' Cup there in 91 with some friends, but I'd never been to the Derby. So 98, I go to the Derby. I run into some guys from Thoroughbred Times, and they're like, somebody had just quit, and they were like, hey, and they saw me. And then kind of next thing I know, I got home from the Derby and I got a phone call from one of the editors. It was like, are you going to be at the Preakness? We got a job opening. We'd like to maybe talk to you about it. So I'm like, sure. I'd love to. So, but I wasn't going to the Preakness. Funny, they sent me the Derby. They didn't send me the Preakness. So
The Preakness is the bridesmaid.
Yeah, I know.
Of events.
I know.
And the Belmont is not on the radar unless.
Depending on what happens. Yeah. And that year, in 98, the Triple Crown was on the line and real quiet. So I sort of put it, I sent him my resume, did all that kind of stuff, applied for the job, and sort of went through the formalities of the phone interview. And I met with Mark Simon, who was the editor-in-chief, over breakfast at the Morning Line Kitchen at Belmont Park, like maybe the day before or 2 days before the 98 Belmont. And then I come back from the Belmont, they offered me the job. I had already talked to my editor at the Saratogian, and basically said that I was going to, start looking for something else. But I made a commitment. I said, I'll stay through the summer. I'll do the races again, but chances are I'm going to look for something else. Well, then this came about. Thoroughbred Times wanted me to start like August 1st.
Sure.
So I was like, we were only like, I think it was maybe a 5 week meet then. The meet had started, and I did a few races. I left the day of the Whitney, when Tail of the Cat was in the Whitney mm-hmm. that year. I'm trying to remember who. Victor Gallup may have won it. No, he was three then. So it was. It was Victory. So the next day was the Haskell. I remember Victory Galvin, Conquistador, Shug's Horse. Gosh, drawing a blank, total blank.
Yeah. Don't worry about it. I do it all the time.
Yeah. But, yeah. So I drove down and, I didn't start August 1st. I think I started, around the 7th or 8th. And, I covered, the last race I covered was the Amsterdam here. I remember Grand Motion and Muhammad Mubarak had horses that dead heated.
Muhammad Mubarak.
Mint was one of the horses' names, and Graham's horse. They dead heated, that was a Friday. Drove to Kentucky on a Saturday, kind of settled in on Sunday, and started working my new job on Monday.
So before we talk a little bit about Thoroughbred Times, I'm curious, and I'm a retired English teacher, so I'm always curious about process. Journalist mm-hmm. process. So would you talk just for a bit about how you go about researching, interviewing, and what you're looking for in your process for producing an article?
Yeah, that's
just an easy question.
Yeah, there's a lot of different ways to do it. Sometimes I joke with my interns once in a while, and I basically pull a rabbit out of a hat sometimes to do it. I don't like to do it that way, but sometimes stories just fall in your lap. And there's been times when I've been back here and I'm just kind of standing around kind of gathering my thoughts and trying to figure out what I'm going to do, and somebody that I need to talk to just happens to come up to me and start talking to me, and I'm like,
hey, here we go.
Perfect. but I don't, you can't guarantee that that's going to happen. So for example, stuff that I'm doing here, I covered I covered the Fasig Tipton sale the other day, so it was like 3 days worth of articles. So the first day, I basically went through the catalog, kind of did a little bit of research about how the sale did last year, looking at the history of the sale last few years, looked at the history of some sales this year, like July. Fasig Tipton has a yearling sale in July. I looked at last year's September sale, and I kind of getting a good read for what the economy is like, what's the stock market been like. These are the people that are going to be buying the horses. Generally are very involved in the stock market, rich, they're very wealthy. So did all that. Then I went over to the sales grounds on Sunday, basically spent, 2 to 3 hours over there just kind of milling around, talking to people, just kind of conversations with people, just kind of getting a feel for what they think is going on.
Letting them reveal to you
exactly
what their thoughts are, not only about horses that have been paraded around in front of them. That's interesting. I like that.
Yeah, and then you sort of formulate sort of a theme of where you think the story's going to go, and then I'll dig in and do some actual, like, I don't want to say more serious interviews, but interviews that I'm going to probably use in the story. So I have that broad sense of what's going on, and then I can ask Boyd Browning, the Fasig Tipton president, about what's going on. I can ask some of the key consigners about what they think's going on. I can go circle back maybe with some of the people that I've already talked to, just sort of anecdotally, and get some actual,
You're creating a frame.
Absolutely.
And then the sequence is evolving and developing, mm-hmm. and then you'll pull some quotes or some interviews to kind of punctuate how you read it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and then you sort of have all that information, and then that's sort of the, I don't want to say that's the fun part, or maybe the more of the easy part. It's kind of just like you and I are sitting here talking. Then you actually have to do the writing, mm-hmm. and at times the writing is easy. At times it's a chore, but I always say there's nothing like the deadline to motivate you. You have that deadline. The paper, we have to put the paper out every day. It has to come out. There's an empty space on that page.
It's
that
yours.
Has to be filled. Knock on wood, writer's block is not, I hear a lot of people talk about it. It's not anything I've ever had to really deal with. I'll struggle at times to kind of get going on a story, but only because I know that a certain direction I want it to go, and I'm just not really phrasing it the right way.
As a professional who kind of labored with young writers.
Yeah.
Hearing a professional talk out loud about the challenges of getting it from the brain to the paper is confirmation. Kids think, oh, okay, I'll write it. No, but I don't know you all that well, but how I know you, I just think you have a lively mind. And so I think what's jumping around in there, given where you've put yourself and who you've talked to, it's just a question of it coming to the fore. And deadlines are good for two reasons. One, you got to meet them, and then you also have to know, listen, this is the best I got, and it's got to go.
Yeah.
Because you could sit there for a lifetime revising things.
Oh, right? Yeah. And it's some of the greatest writers of all time. I'm talking sports writers or maybe just news reporters are just doing great stuff on deadline, just because you have to do it. The urgency is there. Yeah. The pressure, quote unquote pressure, is there to do it. Yeah.
All right. Let's go back to Thoroughbred Times, because it was from Thoroughbred Times that you came to the special.
Yeah. So
let's do that.
Yeah. So summer of 98, Thoroughbred Times as a staff writer, eventually got promoted to deputy news editor, became the news editor. All the way up to managing editor. I was basically the second in charge there until it went out of business. I was there for a bankruptcy. Got a FedEx letter in the mail on a Saturday morning saying, thank you for your service. Just wanted to let you know that Thoroughbred Times Incorporated is no longer exists. The company filed for bankruptcy. Here's your information about your 401k and your Cobra health insurance, blah, 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 blah.
Isn't that a wonderful experience?
That was great. So corporate America, So I got a real good inside look at corporate America and what it's like to work for a company that is not fully invested in the Thoroughbred industry. So at the time, I was kind of considering a job as an editor at Runner's World magazine.
Yeah,
I had applied for it, and I was one of the finalists for it. But so I kind of thought, maybe it's time for a change. And then that happened, And I was like, I wasn't overly worried about it because I was like, I'm going to get the job at Runner's World and I'm going to be on my way, you know? I didn't get that job. And then I was kind of like figuring out what I wanted to do. I was very fortunate that I had a lot of friends and allies in the business that reached out to me. Different publications, people that work at racetracks that offered me work, which was great, you know? At the time, you know, I wasn't desperate, you know, like money-wise, I was doing okay. I was kind of figuring out what I wanted to do.
How old?
So it was 2000, was it 2012? So I was 41.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm 48 now. So it's amazing that it was that long ago. Now I was talking about this with somebody else the other day, and I bring it up, you know, like, and I'm like, it feels like a long time ago. So the people that I did speak to, I was kind of like, I got a few opportunities. None of the opportunities that came up, I was not even going to consider if the people were not fully invested in horse right. racing. So I was kind of thinking like, okay, if Keeneland offers me a job or the Jockey yeah. Club offers me a job, yeah. it's got to be
it. They're in it to win it.
Racing.
So, yeah.
They have to be, and they have to be fully invested, not as corporate, you know. So Sean Clancy and I have been friends for years, just colleagues. I respect him. I respect what he and Joe did with the paper. I remember coming up here and seeing it, and Sean and I always used to joke. Sean used to joke with me all the time. He's like, we got to get you out of that corner office, and you need to start doing more writing. You're doing way too much editing. You're too good of a writer. You should come and work with my brother and I. He's like, even if it's just a week, like, take a week off or third time. Just come up and work with me.
They are sneaky, seductive guys,
like,
aren't they?
Someday I will. Maybe someday. So, well, that someday arrived, you know, and Sean called me and was like, I distinctly remember where I was. I used to coach soccer when I was in Lexington, youth soccer. I was coaching a team, and I had a game, and my phone rang like three times. Sean called me, and he texted me. He's like, he wasn't sure if the number was the right number, if it was a work phone or it had been shut off. And then so he texted me. He's like, come on, man. Like, I'm calling you. Answer. Call me back. And I was like, I texted him back like during the game. Like, I'm coaching a game. you know, life goes on, right? I mean, the bankruptcy and everything. So I remember calling him back. I was at Masterson Station Park, and that's my man, Masterson Station Park. And I'm talking on the phone with him, and we just sort of like specced it out. And he's like, my brother and I thinking about maybe expanding our business a little bit. You know, we're not really actively looking for someone, but if the right person came around, we always said maybe we would bring him on board. And he said, you know, we could maybe do one of three things. You could maybe stay here in Lexington. It'd be great for you to be there. Good attachment to the farms. A lot of our clients are there. Maybe you can move to Fair Hill, you know, and come work out of the home office, which they've had employees in the past do that. Or, you know, like one thing we really like is a year-round presence in Saratoga, you know, to help with finding housing for the interns or setting up the office every year, taking down the office every year, establishing some local ties, you know, because they would just kind of shoot in a few days before the meet, dash around, do whatever, and then we're right into the paper. We don't really have much time to do stuff. I went downtown yesterday, and like I was like, wow, you know, like I think I've been downtown Saratoga like twice since the meet started, and we're a month in. I mean, we just don't have time to do it. So it was good for me to do that. I was ready to leave Kentucky at the time. You know, I just kind of been through all that. Thoroughbred industry kind of soured me a little bit with the business. That there was a downturn in the business as it was. Then the bankruptcy, et cetera, et cetera. So I was like, well, you know, at the time my mom was still alive, and she was here, and she had been sick. So I said, you know, maybe it'd be a good idea to just go do that. So move to Saratoga, move back to my hometown as an adult, right? So I've been gone for 15 years. Saratoga changed a lot in those years. I mean, I got to see a lot of those changes because I would come home for the holidays and stuff like that. So I still very much considered Saratoga my home, even when I lived in Kentucky. But now that I'm back here, I sort of think of Lexington as my home still. So, you know, I've been very fortunate to live in two really nice places in my life.
So let me just share, which will be funny in the long run, my experience with the evolution of your Saratoga special.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, I don't remember the first year that they opened.
2001.
Okay. Well, you know, I've always sold a tip sheet out here, okay? And so what ired me about the special is that because the Clancy boys were insiders, they could market it inside, and they could give it away free in the boxes, as they did, you know. And I understand all that as marketing. But they used to tell me, no, you can't stand there. You can't do this. And, you know, initially I felt like, my goodness, it's competition, but not really, because you're a newspaper.
Yeah.
You've always been much more what they wanted it to be, to fill a void that they saw and provide content for the people who love this game that was not available. And so over the long haul, you know, I've had both Sean and Joe on the show over the year. They're terrific guys.
Yeah.
We become good friends, and it's a great piece. So now you're at the special, and it wasn't special till Tom Law got there, right?
I don't know about that. This is my seventh year now, 2013. So I started with those guys in December of 2012, it was great. You know, like, just my first summer was a whirlwind. You know, I kind of got indoctrinated into it right away, but I loved it. You know, like, and I do a lot of different things with the special. I manage the interns, our staff of interns, you know, set up, like I said, all the grunt work, setting up the stuff.
Let's talk about those folks. You've had a boatload of them. Where do you recruit them from? And talk about how some of them have gone on to do good things.
It's a great list of people. You know, Travis Stone, and who's a race caller at Churchill Downs. Gabby Gaudette, of course, is a rising star. She was on my first staff, and she had done it the year before. You know, the list is huge. I mean, the recent ones I have is a woman, Shayna Tiller. She just finished the Irish National Stud program. She worked with us for the last three summers. Irish National Stud, now she's got a job at Blue Water Sales, so she's working in the thoroughbred industry. Another girl, Anise Montpleasure, who we call Fargo. She's from North Dakota, and great girl. She did two summers with us. Now she's in the Godolphin Flying Start program. She's kind of on her
way. That's a great program.
She's going to get a great job somewhere doing something.
There's not enough people know about that program.
Yeah. So we call our program, we were the Flying Start before the Flying Start. So and the Clancys, they're the ones that deserve all the credit for it. I mean, they like the idea of sort of hiring eager, fresh minds that I can say, hey, go interview that light post over there, and they're a lot of our interns, they're ready to go do it. You know, they'll dig right in, and it's refreshing to me. You know, we get a lot of people that are. And I'll answer your question about where we get them from. But we get people that are either interested in the racing business, or they're interested maybe in journalism. There's not a ton of those left anymore, journalism. Mm. Or they have maybe an interest in both. It'd be perfect if they had an interest in both. Like, if they want to do, like, communications, or they want to work, you know, in publicity at the track. Like, Ryan Martin is one guy that we had who works for NYRA now. He was my first year. Ryan, you know, he knew what he wanted to do. Yeah. He can write well. He can communicate with people pretty well. But then we have other people that just kind of like clearly just want to learn the racing business. And Sean tells a story about John Panigot. He wanted to become a jocks agent. Sean was like, you don't want to be a jocks agent, da, da, da. See, John worked with him. He did some handicapping. He was a good handicapper, a good horse player, understands the game. But he needed to kind of get an inside look at the game. Well, he's Javier Castellano's agent now. I mean, he's doing great. So we get them from a lot of different sources. A lot of times it's people we know, their kids, or, you know, somebody that we know, it's somebody that they know's kids, people that we know in the business. Like, we had Kristen Brennan a couple years ago. She's the daughter of Niall Brennan, who's a two-year-old sales consigner, really good horseman in Florida. You know, and they sort of find, sometimes they just find us. Like, Ben Gowans, who works for us now. Catherine Galbraith on the team now. They sort of found us. They knew about the special, and they sort of reached out to us.
How many people are sitting in the garage over there pumping out the paper?
Oh, on a given night, we have three full-time writer staff this year, three interns, Brandon Valvo, Ben, and Catherine. We lost one of our interns this summer. She had to drop out due to some health issues. Yeah. But we've had anywhere from three to some years we have six. We had a guy, we have one other man named Terry Hill, and he's 75 years old. And he reached out to us.
My kind of guy.
This is great. So he reached out to us and said, I just felt like the Saratoga Special is just a great opportunity and a great internship for young people. And he's like, why couldn't I do it? He's retired. He lives in Mexico most of the year. And he lives in New York City in Mexico. And he reached out to us and, you know, he's done some writing. He's got a history in marketing and advertising. He was a lawyer at one time. Really kind of a cool kind of guy. He reached out to us over the winter and we're like, well, it might be kind of fun, you know, like he adds a totally different voice
Absolutely.
To the paper. And so Terry's been great. Terry's been great to have.
Good.
And he's written some really funny columns about his experience and just kind of, you know, being nervous and sort of dealing with the deadline pressure
sure.
and everything. So he's been a lot of fun. And we had another guy kind of pitch in, a guy from sports writer from Boston, a guy named Paul Halloran, who came for Whitney weekend. He's coming back for Travers weekend. He's a traditional, like what I would call a regular traditional sports writer.
We're going to talk about that.
Covers the races. And he gets right into it, and we had him covering stuff, and he was a big help for us during sales week and Whitney weekend when we're just slammed. I mean, I wrote 5,200 words the other day in Sunday's paper. I mean, it was just a monster effort. But it was hard. But having an extra body makes a world of difference. Somebody that I can just say, you go do that, and they just go do it.
Okay. So how many issues for the meet?
So we do 34 issues.
30 for the meet. Now, the last thing I want to talk about the special is tell me about closing night and the revelry I'm going to say the sigh, the collective sigh. Talk about the end of the match.
Well, it's funny. The newspaper business is cool because you have sort of the finality of it every single day, and it's a relief, you know, like – and there's different parts of relief throughout the day. We do this thing called the Fasig Tipton Stable Tour every day. We go interview a trainer. We go look at the horses. We spend time with them. They tell us about all the horses. Well, it's a big anvil around my neck sometimes because sometimes we're scrambling to get it done. Every day when I get that done, I always feel that sense of relief.
I understand
when we
perfectly.
When you finish your story, you feel a sense of relief. When we finish the paper, it's a sense of relief. Now, the last paper is an amazing sense of relief. I think the partying would be way more intense if we weren't so tired, you know. Our last paper is the last Sunday of the meet, so we don't do a Labor Day edition. So we do the last Sunday, and I mean, we just, you know, it's Woodward Day. There's a lot of graded stakes and stuff that day that we have covered, and quite often a lot of our interns are already gone because they're back to college.
To
so like we're doing everything by then. I mean, we do everything now. I think that's one of the reasons. Another reason why the interns work so well with us is because we don't just send them out to do the grunt work, and we do it ourselves. I'll deliver the papers.
It's called modeling.
Yeah, I'm picking up paper
boxes. Don't
tell me.
Don't tell me the deadline is too soon.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm doing it too. So, but that last night is fun. You know, like we'll pop a few beers and some people will show up. A lot of times, people bringing us food and all kinds
that's
of
great.
People popping their heads in. You know, a lot of times people stop by like when we're on deadline. You know, a lot of people are like, I saw the light was on. We're like, if the light's on, we're working. You know, if the light's off, we're home, right?
Okay.
So, but that last night's pretty fun. And waking up Sunday morning is always kind of surreal. You know, like we still will come out and do the paper and deliver the paper and see people. And everybody's always like, oh, is it the last day? You know, and so there's a little bit of sadness to it. But at the same time, there's just an amazing sense of relief.
We have that same sense of relief at the bed and breakfast when we realize we don't have to cook for 20.
I bet. Yeah.
I want you to shift hats.
Sure.
You're also deeply involved and have been in the National Turf Writers and Broadcasters.
That's correct.
And occasionally in the Twitterverse, if you will, and there's all sorts of criticism loped on turf riders for sometimes not taking on issues or not speaking truth to whatever the power is. To me, I've always said context is everything. So what I'd like you to do, Tom, is talk a little bit about the context of being a turf rider, let's say in the age of Joe Hirsch, and as it has evolved and as the industry supporting and reporting on horse racing has changed?
Mm-hmm. Well,
easy question.
Yeah, this is a wide open question, right? Yeah. I mean, I can speak to it because I did it at Thoroughbred Times. We covered a lot of major issues, you know, and I like to think that we did it in an unbiased kind of way. You know, we weren't afraid to dig into certain issues if we saw things were were troublesome. And we do the same thing with at Mid-Atlantic Thoroughbred. Mm-hmm. Joe, Sean, and I are involved in with Mid-Atlantic Thoroughbred. We provide all the editorial content for them. So we'll do issues there. I've done a lot of stories about medication in Mid-Atlantic. I think the point that you're talking about, like people for the trade publications or the racing publications, you know, they're supported by advertisers, which their advertisers are prominent farms, organizations, racetracks, businesses that are tied to the racing business.
Hmm.
Almost always directly tied, you know. So it's a little prickly to do a story about farm XYZ that has an issue going on.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I can remember just doing stories about lawsuits. I remember writing stories about lawsuits involving sales consigners.
Right.
And having to call them on the phone. And, I mean, I'll just being cussed at and called everything but a child of God. You know, I mean, I can't believe you're calling me. You're going to write a story about this. We're going to pull our advertising, you know. That's when your publication has to make some serious hard decisions.
That's right.
And what kind of publication are you going to be? Now, I think general newspapers, not necessarily like the Saratoga Special newspaper, but like a Albany Times Union or the New York Times or whatever. I mean, they're not really beholden to that. They're not tied to those farms or racetracks. I mean, their only obligation is they have two obligations to the reader and to the truth, I think. So they should report on stuff. I think they should report on stuff without an agenda, without and telling both sides of the story. And I think today's day and age, there's a lot of things that are reported on that are not accurate. You know, like I've read stories in publications talking about the breakdown rates of horses and that are just completely wrong. I can remember doing research on it.
We live in an age where people choose the facts they wish to believe.
Absolutely, and it's harmful to our game. And quite honest, it's like the whole thing with Santa Anita all winter long.
Right.
Like I was getting tired of having to talk about it. People are talking to me about it. When our game's integrity comes into question, I mean, you know that people are going to ask you about it.
Yeah.
I don't mind to talk about it, but when it's starting to get to the point where it's affecting my livelihood, whereas people are making bad decisions about things, whether it's the tracks or the horsemen or whoever it may be, and then the thing gets spun around to become a medication issue and a jockey whip issue. But, I mean, and then people are like, so is that the reason why the horses are breaking down? Is because they're running on Lasix? I'm like, where do I even begin? I mean, I have my own opinions about that, but I just think it's completely the wrong way to go. And you know, Rick Violet was a friend of mine and somebody that I really respected and somebody that was really smart, and you know, I would defer to him on a lot of stuff. He's smart. I mean, he was such a great guy, and
great guy.
You know, I really miss him, and I think the industry really misses a guy like Rick, you know. And you know, I'm going all over the place Rick would be somebody good, like, you know, as a reporter, going back to being a reporter, that I could pick up the phone and talk to Rick about something, and not necessarily going to quote him on anything. He'll give you the
skinny.
And then again, going back to the how you research a story, I mean, a really good reporter, you're doing that. You have your sources. Like, you hear about people talking about their sources. Well, sources sometimes give you information for a story that you'll use in that story. Other sources just kind of give you background information, and then you know what direction you can report on. You know, like I've had several guys when I was at Thoroughbred Times that I still have relationships with now, but I don't really interact with them as much. But that would give me information about things, whether it be the sales industry or the bloodstock industry, like talking about stallions. You know, like I had some guys that just knew they had the inside track on which farms were going to get which stallions, and we would get the jump on it. You know, a lot of times it'd be great to break those stories. It'd be like, well, we're going to have a press release coming out next week, and I'd be like, well, I got it confirmed. I'm not waiting for the press release, you know.
Well, that's your business.
Exactly.
That's your business. And everybody wants to manage your business.
Of course.
Your
business. Oh, yeah. Right, right.
In their bachelor. It's been a changing times and sometimes a difficult time for National Turf Riders.
Oh, very much so.
As the game has evolved. I want to let you finish on a...
Yeah, on
a positive note. You love the game, and you're not leaving the game under any circumstances foreseen circumstances.
No.
So if you were the czar of racing, what would you like to see happen, be it on the news edge, the marketing edge, the information? I don't know. I know you're too busy now to really sit and ponder about this, but I know you've had time.
No.
What would you like to see happen in the game?
I think the game has done a decent job in sort of becoming an experience for people. I think that's the thing we need to work on the most. You know, there's a lot of issues that obviously need to be addressed, whether it be aftercare or medication or
sure.
safety. Those are all very important issues, and I think they're all being worked on. But I just look at it from somebody growing up in the game and falling in love with it. I fell in love with it because I liked the action. I liked the place. I mean, you can't beat this place. You know, I walked around the other day, and I'm just like, this place is like dripping in history, and it's just so cool. You know, like I was walking around in the grandstand, and there was no one in there, and I was just kind of like, you know, I just really love it here. You know, like, and what makes me love it so much? I think you have that sense of place, and it's a positive environment, and you feel good about it. The people have good energy. I really love Keeneland too. Like, I feel like if you go to the races at Keeneland, you go to the races here, you have a positive experience. I want people to always have a positive experience when they go to the racetrack, because my livelihood depends on it. Like, the game for me needs to stick around, you know, like it needs to be, and those people need to have a positive experience, whether it's from the moment they get to the track. I want them to have a positive experience. Who's helping them park their car, who's walking them into the entrance gate.
Sure.
I mean, and you know, like, and I will say this about Keeneland, you go there, I mean, it is top-notch hospitality. They're like, welcome to Keeneland, hope you have a nice day, blah,
that's
blah,
good.
Blah, blah, blah.
That's a culture.
That's totally a culture.
That's the culture. You know, it just said, if you'll allow me, I contend that we're a ball culture as a country.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
And in other places where thoroughbreds are important, thoroughbred racing is more in the culture. If you look at the British Isles or England or France, the meat moves almost like our old fair circuits that we don't have anymore. And you said a very important thing. It's about the experience. And you also said action.
Yeah.
See, I still think that the best experience is winning.
Oh, absolutely.
And the second best experience is leaning because you almost won.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you just want to be close,
you
right?
You just want to be close.
You just want to have the act. You just want to be involved.
Be close. Because a day of not even being close,
it's
a tough one at the track. Anyhow.
I also do think the experience, and I think, you know, and I understand that this racing is a business. You know, it's the racing business. I'd like to see maybe a little bit shorter race day. I'd like to maybe see, I don't know that it's ever going to happen. You know, some days up here, we're running these big stakes races and half the crowd is gone.
Yep.
I mean, I know NIRA is cognizant of that and they get it. And they're taking in a lot of handle from all over the country. A lot of people like their races, justifiably so. They're the best. We got the best racing in the country here.
Absolutely.
In the world, really, that people in California are betting on. So it's not like I don't want them to run the Travers at 2:00 in the afternoon, but, people want to go to dinner and they want to, I hear it from people. I'm not saying anything. It doesn't affect me at all because I'm doing my newspaper. Yeah. I'm watching people walk home from my window.
That's right.
But, you know, so I don't know that the days of the 9-race card is going to happen again, but those were special days too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I want to thank you, Tom, for coming and spending the time with me and our Capital OTB audience. We would encourage you all, if you're on track, pick up the Saratoga Special, get the feel of that hard copy. If not, this guy sends it out every morning. What time does that email go out? And to how many?
So a little industry insider secret, that email is basically automated. Set it up the night before to go out.
Yeah.
I think it goes out about 5:00.
Yeah. I know, I did.
A.M. We started a new thing this year called the Reader's Club, the Saratoga Special Reader's Club, where you can sign up and it's $35, you get a nice hat, you get a nice sticker, you kind of support us. But you get the email for the internet version the night before.
Oh.
So you don't have to wait till 5 a.m.
Well, you got to get some.
Or you can always go to our website, which is thisishorseracing.com, and we put all the digital editions on there too. Yeah. So you have some winter time reading if you can't get
it. It's terrific. I'm proud to call you my friend, and I'm proud to I'm proud of what you and your guys do over there. So thank you very much for joining us.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you, Tom.
Y'all be well. We'll be back next week. Yeah, we're done.